Welcome to Metaphysical Romp with Reverend Paul Hasselbeck and co-host Reverends Bill Holton and Cher Holton. Discover practical applications to bring 21st century metaphysics to work in your life. Here's your host, Paul Hasselbeck.
Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp 2. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck. It's another beautiful day in my consciousness. It's another beautiful day outside in Kansas City. And I'm here with my friends.
Hi, this is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton coming from Durham, North Carolina. And it is beautiful here today. But even more importantly, it's a beautiful day in my consciousness.
And this is the Reverend Doc Bill Holton, also at the Durham end of our table. And it is very definitely another beautiful, beautiful day in my consciousness as well. And as you guys know, Cher and I are the co-founders of the Unity Center for UniversalProsperity.org. And we spell universal, Y-O universal, because it's about your human happiness and spiritual growth.
And as always, we invite you to come visit us at our website, ucfyp.org, and just see all the great stuff we have there for you.
Yes, indeed. They have a lot of stuff there, unlike my website, paulhasselbeck.com, which really simply focuses on my weekly blog, the Absolute Word, and my calendar of events, appearances, yada, yada, yada. And speaking of yada, 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 Metaphysical Romp 2 is all about spirituality, pseudo-spirituality, science, and pseudoscience. And in this series, we're really focused on science, what some people commonly believe, which have already been disproven, but nobody knows it yet. I guess that's how I'll put it. So this is part two of our Exploring the 10 Science Delusions, the 10 Science Delusions, based on Rupert Sheldrake's book, The Science Delusion. And Bill's going to riff on that a little bit right now.
Yeah, the reason Rupert calls these delusions is that the materialistic science priesthood does not believe that anything that isn't matter exists. And so they don't even include the etherealness, if you will, anything that they consider as non-material in their research. So their scientific method is only partially complete because they're not using all the evidence that's available in order to compose a scientific finding that's really accurate. And that's the issue here.
Yeah. And the obvious one is, in a way, they shouldn't believe in consciousness at all. And the way they fix that is saying consciousness arises out of the matter of our brains. Right. Yeah. Right. So shall we get going? I'm going to do starting on the second one this time. You're going to take it away, Cher?
Yes. And again, we remind you that when we state the statement, it is what is called the science delusion. So it's not what we believe. It's the statement that Sheldrake and us are talking about. So the statement is, and the belief is, all matter is unconscious. All matter is unconscious. So the notion that all matter is unconscious is a philosophical position often associated with materialism, as Bill was talking about, or physicalism, which asserts that everything, including conscious experiences and mental phenomena, can ultimately be reduced to physical matter and its interactions. While this perspective has been influential, it has several limitations and faces criticism. And so we want to dive into seven of the reasons why this idea that all matter is unconscious can be debunked. So are we ready to dive in?
And I want to add this before we even start with number one, because it relates to everything that we'll discuss in number one. And it's by Francis Crick. It's a quote by Francis Crick. And I'm sure you guys have heard of him, along with Watson. They were the two that discovered DNA's double helix. And so there's credibility with this scientist. And here's what he says. There is always a possibility that the facts support a new alternative way of looking at the mind-brain problem that is significantly different from the rather crude materialistic view that many neuroscientists hold today.
Is that like being up a creek without a premise?
Oh, I like that, Paul. Up a creek without a premise. Yeah. That's a good definitely. So are you ready to dive in, or did you
want- I'm ready, and I'm going to add something Sheldrake says later on in the chapter with, and I'm quoting Sheldrake, if materialism is true, all bodies, including yours and mine, are essentially unconscious. Your subjective experiences emerge from your brain as an epiphenomenon, and they're not real, according to the materialist priesthood.
Wow. This is a big one, and I actually have a hard time wrapping my mind around, my consciousness around, someone actually today believing this, that matter is unconscious. Now, I will say, there is, in my opinion, at this point in time, there is some matter that's unconscious, like a rock is probably unconscious. But that doesn't mean living material, living matter is unconscious.
Exactly. Anything that has sentience is conscious to some degree.
Yeah. Well, even if, so since I study biology, even if you're looking at a single cell amoeba, it demonstrates consciousness when it contacts something that is food, it will surround it and digest it. Well, that's like a conscious behavior to me.
And you're exactly right. And another example of that, and this has been proven for the past 40 years, 50 years, is that let's say you're in the hospital and you're being operated on and you're serious in terms of injuries, and your brain stops and your heart stops, and officially you're dead for those couple of minutes or so. But there are people then who report that they're up at the ceiling level looking down on their body, which means that their consciousness is not inside of a brain that doesn't work.
And what's really interesting about those reports is they're not even freaked out that they're at the ceiling looking down on their bodies. It seems like a very natural experience, right?
And something else that's just absolutely fabulous about that is people who are sight challenged, who are blind, also see themselves on the bed being operated on, and they're blind.
Let's don't even go there anymore. I'm not sure that's a path I want to go down.
But the other thing that we've heard from the research is once you've had that experience, you no longer have a fear of death.
Yes.
It's something around the fear of death that takes that away for a lot of people.
Because they know there's more to us than our physicality.
Right.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Okay.
Okay. I think we can go on to the next one, Cher.
Okay, so we've got seven actual problems with that he dives into. So let's look at those in terms of the idea that all matter is unconscious. The first one is conscious experience. And here's what he says. The most significant challenge to this perspective is the existence of conscious experience. Each of us has a subjective inner world of thoughts, emotions, and perceptions, which is not easily explained solely by physical processes. The phenomenon of consciousness remains one of the most profound and unresolved questions in philosophy and science.
Yeah, but there can be no argument, as far as I'm concerned, that consciousness doesn't exist, because we're all experiencing this thing that in the big way is called awareness.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And what's interesting too about this, and thanks for bringing that up, Paul, is because there is, as we speak on this podcast, there is no universal definition of what consciousness is. There's no definition that everyone can agree with that this is how we define consciousness.
Yeah, so we talk about this a lot, and there does seem to be some clustering, I think, around the idea that consciousness is awareness. And then just to remind people, there's an article that I read where consciousness is made up of at least three components: awareness, arousal, and motivation. But like Bill said, there's not a real large consensus. And the ironic thing is we're talking about no real consensus about that. and these things that are being debunked, there's consensus around them.
Exactly.
And one of the examples under conscious experience is just like when we taste something, and for me it's delicious, for you you don't like it. That goes beyond just, you know, that it's matter. It's the way we experience it within ourselves that makes it personal. Or
and
pain.
I'll tell you what, when I don't like something, it matters.
And really, I don't want anybody else trying to make me like it.
Yeah,
just exactly. Because they like it.
Oh, as all adults do to children.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Let's go on to number two. It is called the hard problem of consciousness. And the guy who came up with that is philosopher David Chalmers, who introduced the concept of the hard problem of consciousness, which refers to the difficulty of explaining why and how physical processes in the brain give rise to our subjective experiences. The question of why certain neuroactivities are associated with particular conscious states goes beyond the reductionist, materialistic view of consciousness as purely physical.
Well, I have to say that was beginning to sound a little bit like Charlie Brown's teacher.
Yeah, there's a lot of words there.
So can you summarize that in a way in plain English that our listeners could understand?
I actually think it goes back to what Bill said when he was just making that general statement about consciousness, is that scientists and philosophers have a hard time explaining it. They can't explain how physical things can create our thoughts and feelings. It's like a puzzle, like a big jig. It's kind of like a jigsaw puzzle when you don't have the picture on the box.
Yes.
To solve it, you've got all the information and the pieces, but it's really confusing how you put the idea together.
This is kind of like none of the Lego pieces fitting together like they're supposed to.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's like, this doesn't work.
Yes.
We can't explain it, or we do it differently. And that's what makes it hard to explain, I guess, is consciousness is experienced so differently by people.
It's just a totally different realm of thinking. As a matter of fact, its consciousness would be in what some philosophers and neuroscientists, parascientists, I guess I should say, like Sheldrake would call the supraliminal. And the supraliminal means that which is above normal consciousness. It's an elevated level of awareness, as Paul brought up earlier.
I like that word, supraliminal.
Yeah. Superliminal. I even was able to say it.
Like he really gets it.
Yeah. So where are we going next?
Wait, before we go next, from a practical point of view for us, those of us and the people listening on this podcast, we use the words consciousness a lot in our languaging. And we even get into capital C consciousness, which we've had conversations about capital C consciousness, small C consciousness. Does that mean awareness? And so I think it's important to realize that when we talk about consciousness, we want to at least be able to define for ourselves what we're meaning and how we are defining it, which is one of the reasons we stopped saying we're increasing our consciousness, because we don't. We increase our awareness of consciousness that's accessible. And so I think that's how this discussion fits into what we teach.
Yes. I've had more than one student that was steeped in Buddhism, and they had a hard time understanding what I was saying. And then they shared what they understood, and I think my brain exploded, but they said, well, Buddhism talks about awareness beyond awareness.
Hmm.
It's like, what?
That's like saying,
and that's a superliminal.
Superliminal. Okay. I was going to say, that's like saying chocolate beyond chocolate.
Yeah. Let's bring it down to down to planet Earth now. And I know we've got to move on, but this is an example I think folks can appreciate. Three of us have gone to graduate school. There are folks out there who go to high school and college, et cetera, and grad schools. And there's a grading system they use for tests from an A to an F. Well, if you have a certain amount of knowledge and awareness that only takes you up to a C grade, the A grade is still there.
Yes.
You haven't gotten there yet.
Yes.
So the more awareness you have, takes your knowledge, takes you closer to the high, which in this case, and in that case, is grade A from F to an A. But the more aware we are of who and what we are and our place in the universe and our understanding of even the natural world takes us closer to the subliminal conscious level.
That's good.
That's there.
That's good. All right.
Explains it. So great. So we do not have the hard problem of consciousness.
No, I don't think I don't have a problem about consciousness.
But I do think people we work with, if we don't explain how we're defining it, it could create issues.
So that's So we have assumptions or premises about consciousness that we work with. But those premises, at least at this point in time, are not entirely provable. One of them being, and this is around that fancy word, panpsychism, is that consciousness is a fundamental characteristic of consciousness. A fundamental characteristic of the universe.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so we have matter, physical universe, we have consciousness, and we have the constants and laws that humankind has discovered about the physical universe. So those are the three components I know of, and I'm sticking with it till proven wrong.
Yeah. Yes. And panpsychism, you've just covered one of the seven items. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the items that is on his list of issues to be aware of that could cause, you know, question all matter is unconscious.
Yeah. Well, so we'll get back to that is what you're telling me.
Or we just covered it.
Okay. Okay. Great.
You pretty much summed it up. Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Check.
Yeah. So we've done three of them. So I think we have time maybe to stick in one more here. Okay. And this is a cool word that a lot of people may not be familiar with, which is qualia, Q-U-A-L-I-A, and subjectivity. So first, let's define qualia, which is simply the qualities of a conscious experience, like the taste of chocolate, the redness of an apple, or the feeling of pain. That's all in philosophical terms, they call it qualia.
Yeah, subjective experiences.
Yeah.
So qualia are that, subjective experiences.
Yeah.
So you may have one experience of dark chocolate. I'll have an experience of dark chocolate, and they probably are not identical.
Right. And if you had to define what dark chocolate tastes like, I mean, that.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait.
Define a taste.
That's easy. Heaven on earth.
Okay. Superliminal? Is that superliminal?
That's right. Superliminal down to earth.
Yes.
The subjective experiences are challenging to explain in purely physical terms.
They are very much so.
So the what it's like aspect of consciousness can't be captured by physical descriptions alone, which I think that's such a powerful reason why we haven't yet defined it.
Yeah, that boils it down really nicely. And even when I say consciousness is awareness plus arousal plus motivation, I obviously wasn't motivated enough to remember that.
So. Love it.
Yep.
Yeah. So those are even terms that are loosey goosey.
Hard to explain. Yeah.
And I'm going to go with the emergent properties to say something that's going to cut some of the discussion that we have in front of us on that is that when you think about it, by analogy, emergent properties means we have all heard that the whole is the sum of the parts. Well, from a less dogmatic point of view, where you include both material and non-material, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Right. Absolutely.
Yes. And I want to add that the hole in the donut is a non-physical aspect of donutness.
There you go.
That's
I love that.
Beautiful example. I love that, Paul. That's a great place to actually take a bite of the donut and move on to
Okay, let's do that. And that means the absolute word is based on Sunday messages appearing in Daily Word, a copyrighted Unity publication, and has been used with permission. And of course, this always comes from a Sunday. In this case, it's Sunday, October 1st, 2023. And the word is prosperous. I am prosperous. I am grateful. My life may be full of blessings. My family and friends, my home, my memories and experiences. And it may also be easy to take all of it for granted if I focus more on what I'm missing rather than what I have. Being thankful, expressing my gratitude for my good, opens my heart and opens my eyes to many ways I am prosperous. I count my blessings, pausing to give thanks for each one. The more often I do this, the more feelings of gratitude fill my heart, which pushes aside any constricting feelings of scarcity, fear, or envy. From the serenity I feel in my heart to the peace that calms my mind, I am prosperous. As I greet each day with a prayer of thanks, my blessings abound. I am prosperous. I am grateful. I'm grateful for our listeners. I'm grateful for Bill and Cher. And so this is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck signing off, saying, make it a great week.
Oh, and this is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton. And I, too, am so grateful for Paul for allowing us to be part of this wonderful podcast.
And this is the Reverend Dr. Bill Holton, also grateful to be with you folks again. And really remember what the three of us have just invited you to do is to always use the affirmation, I am prosperous, I am grateful.